Guess what we're going to speak about? At Vibhu Chaitanya's request. In part because we're anticipating Balaram's appearance day and Krishna Janmashtami, but also in part because there's a story that he's reading presently in Krishna book. He likes the story. I like the story too. So I thought a nice way to begin would be to go around the room with our younger devotees. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Oh, 7, 8, 9. And see if you can recall something, share something with us about Sudama Brahman, anything. And we'll start with this young girl. She'll give her the first shot at it. Do you know who is Sudama? She's in a shy mood right now. Okay. Well, is he one of Krishna's friends? Wow. Okay. Right. One of Krishna's friends.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Something. One Brahman. Okay. Do you remember what that was that he offered?
Chip rice.
Okay. Yeah.
Sudama didn't ask for anything from Krishna, but Krishna understood, gave him everything just because he offered as much as he was Krishna's Ramana friend and was very humble.
Very humble and what was the rest? He was very humble and didn't expect anything from Krishna.
He went to ask for something, but he realized that having Krishna as a friend was enough, and he didn't need anything else.
Very good.
His wife sent him to go ask Krishna when he was in trouble, but he was like, he didn't ask, he just offered him a
chakra. Okay. He went at his wife's request. Yeah, she wanted something material. We'll speak a little bit about her interest. Sudama Brahman. What about when they were both very small, very little?
They were students of some kind.
Okay. Can you recall something about Sudama Brahman?
Not really.
Not really? You familiar with the story at all? A little bit?
Okay.
What about this poor Bandar? What's that? Does anybody know? Yes, a place in Gujarat. Where is it near? Huh? It's near Dwarka. Near Dwarka. In fact, Kartik 2016, I'm going to take a group of devotees to Dwarka, and we'll also visit Porbandar, the place where Sudama Brahman lived, and we'll, at that location, we'll hear much more than I'm going to be discussing today about Sudama. So here's the first image. This is a very famous and very beautiful painting. The the occasion of Krishna's going to school was kind of unusual because at that time within Vedic culture, young boys, when they became of school age, who were from Brahmana and Kshatriya families, they went to school. And boys in the Vaishya community, they went and assisted their mother and father in their Vaishya activities, whether it was agriculture. Krishi Gorakshavani Jam, Vaishya Karma Swabhava Jam. Three things are mentioned from chapter 18, Bhagavad Gita. Krishi means production of grains or agriculture. When we see paintings of Balaram, this is one question you can answer. When you see a painting of Balaram, what's Balaram often carrying? Not always, but often. He's carrying what? What's hand? What's Krishna holding? A flute. With the flute, he's calling the cows. Go Raksha. Go means cow and Raksha means to protect. Go Raksha. And Balaram is carrying one of his names, his Haladar. He carries a Hala. Dhara means, and he's holding in his hand a plow. And what's plows used for? Agriculture. Yeah. So, Krishi, Goraksha, and then the third one is Vanijam. That's the trade and commerce of products of the cows and the land. Commerce. So those are three common activities or occupations of Vaishyas: agriculture, cow protection, and trade and commerce. So when Krishna was very young, even before most boys his age or in their family tradition, Krishna began herding the calves when he was just three. But most boys, it was when they were five, they would go into the agriculture fields or into the field herding the cows or calves. But so Krishna didn't go to school. But when Krishna went from Vrindavan back to Mathura and was reunited with Vasudeva and Devaki, one of the first things they wanted to do was make sure their son went to school. And so that was at the age of about 12 and a half. That's when he didn't start school until he was that old. And they found he was, you know, in the royal family, so he found the very, very, very best of teachers, and the very best of teachers at that time was Sandipani Muni. And so Krishna, pictured here, and Balaram, they were enrolled in the school of Sandipani Muni. And coincidentally, of course, Sudama is an eternal associate of Krishna. This is just pastime of two young boys, Sudama, who was a Brahmana, and Krishna, who was a Kshatriya, at least the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. So they went to the same school. And although they were from different line, different varna, they became the best of friends. Of course, they're eternally the best of friends, but the Leela is they became very, 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 very best of friends. And something that Prabhupada would often speak about in relation to the Sudama Brahman story, it didn't, that the teacher, had, the concern to pass on first and foremost, not just information, but character. And one of the responsibilities of the teacher in passing on character was to see that the students had a proper kind of humility. And so the teacher would engage the students in different menial activities. Although one is a son of a Brahmin, the other is a son of a Kshatriya, they would be engaged in menial activities. And one of those menial activities, standard menial activity, was to gather ingredients for the fire yajna. So they would go to the forest and gather wood and flowers and other articles needed for the yajna. We find the same description in a number of places. Ajamila, that's what he was sent to do, go to the forest and gather for his father and his spiritual master ingredients for a yajna. So regularly these two, Krishna and his dear friend Sudama, they would go to the forest with this task. And here's a nice painting. They were very good at collecting. There's a little, although he's a brahmana, he has a little hatchet there for chopping the pieces of wood so he could carry in a proper bundle and bring them back. And the property, the training of the young boy is that whatever they received was the property of the spiritual master. Again, Prabhupada would speak about this. Sometimes the brahmana would send the boys to go collect alms on behalf of the teacher. And what cultured person, when a small boy comes to the door and asks for alms on behalf of their teacher, they'll give something. And whatever something is given to the boy, it belongs to the spiritual master. That was the training. Even specifically, consistently, Prabhupada would say. And then the teacher, the spiritual master, would give the items to his wife to cook and prepare and make an offering to Krishna, and then would call the boys to come and take their meal. And if the teacher forgot to call the boys to take their meal, they would fast. Consistently, he would explain like that. Fast means the purpose is not you're supposed to serve, I'll cook and you serve me. Rather, specifically, the student, Brahmachari, was seeing the teacher as the proprietor of whatever it is that he received. Now, how did that translate into adult consciousness? When the young boys became adults and they had some occupation and they go and do some work and they receive some remuneration from that work, who does that remuneration belong to? Not to them, because they learned that when they were little boys. It belongs to the spiritual master or to Krishna, and it's to be used only in Krishna's service. So that was an item of character. Proprietorship. You know, the fruits of your work don't belong to you, it belongs to Krishna. Training, very important training. Oh, Krishna and Sudama were very happy just to be together doing anything. And to do something together, serving Sandipani Muni, they were very, very happy. Now, as the story goes, one day when they went deep into the forest to gather wood, there was a big storm. Whoops, there's another painting showing that they're gathering wood. Very old style painting. Arisen style, I believe. And the big storm. So they sat beneath a large tree for shelter, and the storm went all night long. And Sandipani Muni was in big anxiety, because these two boys doing this service, they're so small, and now there's difficulty. For on my behalf, they're in this difficulty. So first thing in the morning, as soon as the sun rose, the storm had ended, and he went with all the other boys searching in the forest for Krishna and Sudama, and found safe he was so happy and he embraced them and I'm so indebted to you for the sacrifice that you've made. Put yourself in such difficulty just to gather wood for the yajna. But they were very happy just to do this service. We got to spend the whole night together. We had a great time. So in this way, as time passed, Sudama and Krishna became very dear. There's other descriptions in Mahabharata like this of two that went to school together. Can you think of one that... two young men that went to school and then later they grew up. They made a certain vow to one another. Who were those two? Kripacharya. Kripacharya and? Dronacharya and Drupada, King Drupada. So when they were little, the King Drupada, well, he wasn't a king, a prince, said, when I become king, I'll take care of you. I'll become king, I'll have wealth, and we're dear friends, I'll just, you be within my kingdom, and I'll take care of your necessities. And when they grew up, Drupada had a different mood. So that caused a little dispute. And then so many things happened from as a result of that. But with Krishna and Sudama, it wasn't a tragedy like that. It was, they just, as they matured, of course Krishna was so, he's the knower of all things anyways, so he completed everything that Sudama, his teacher, had to offer. Sandipani Muni taught Krishna everything, and he graduated. So they didn't see each other for a long, long time, and of course, Krishna stayed for some time in Mathura, and then Krishna went to Dwarka, and while in Dwarka, Krishna married many queens, and Sudama took up his residence outside the royal capital, in that small, like a suburb of Dwarka, in that small village. And, after some time, he also married. And in the course of his living in a very simple Brahmana's life, his wife became very concerned. You're so lean and thin, all you have is one garment, and that has holes in it, and I'm concerned for your well-being. I have this inspiration. Krishna, your very dear friend Krishna, he's so well situated in Dwarka, and Dwarka is so nearby. If you just were to visit Krishna, and let him know of the difficulty that you're in, surely Krishna will make some arrangement. And Sudama was very contented. So Sudama's concern was the worries of his wife. So those of you that are married, you know how this thing goes. When the wife keeps insisting on something and the husband is thinking, ah. But the wife keeps insisting. So he went. And one of the concerns was when you go to visit to somebody in a royal position, you bring some gift. But he was so poor, he didn't have anything of value to offer to, suitable for a king. So what his wife did was they had some different descriptions of what the rice was, but some broken rice of inferior quality, and put a small amount in a piece of cloth and tied the ends of the cloth together, and that was the gift that Sudama was to offer Krishna. And when he came to Dwarka, he was living in this very, very, very simple village situation in Dwarka's huge palace. Palaces and palaces and so many palaces with great opulence. That this Dwarka is like of the opulence of Vaikuntha. It's just unlimited, spectacular opulence. So there's this nice painting of Sudama with his left hand carrying this little bag of broken rice. And Krishna is so happy to receive Sudama. He immediately got off his throne and went to receive and embraced Sudama, his dear friend. And as is Vedic culture, the Krishna taking the position of a Kshatriya and Sudama in the position of a Brahmana, Krishna wanted to worship him. You see, in front of Sudama is this pitcher of golden pitcher with water and a bowl for washing his feet and offering various articles. And there on our left side, there's Rukmini with her attendants in the back, worshipping Sudama. Really, Krishna worshipped Sudama like one would worship the personality of Godhead, because there's so many places in the Bhagavatam, directly in the 10th canto Bhagavatam, and there are other places also, where Krishna speaks of the Brahmanas being his very heart, his very life, his worshipable object. So he was so happy with the opportunity, just completely stopped everything he was doing and began worshipping Sudama. Now this particular image is less clear than some I've seen, but if you look very clearly at a sharper image, you can see Sudama, tears are rolling down his cheeks. And Krishna, tears are rolling down his cheeks. Krishna's hands are washing his feet, but he's just completely absorbed in his dear friend Sudama's eyes. And Sudama is not paying any attention to what's happening with his feet. He's completely absorbed in his meditation upon his dear friend Krishna. Such a loving exchange. This is one of the most outstanding qualities, if not the most outstanding quality of Krishna, that our acharyas highlight, is this quality of bhakta vatsala. What does bhakta vatsala mean? Bhakta vatsala means? Yes, bhakta vatsala. Similar, the root is like vatsalya rasa, but vatsala has unfettered affection for his devotee. He holds his devotee very dear to him. Outstanding, because the devotees hold the Supreme Lord, Krishna, very dear to them. There's a wonderful statement of this quality of Krishna is found when Durvasa Muni comes to Lord Vishnu and petitions Lord Vishnu to get him released from the Sudarshan Chakra. Do you have a Bhagavatam set here? Yes. Canto 9. Canto 9, Bhagavatam.
It's over there. It's underneath there.
It's one of the good things about speaking on subject matters from the Bhagavatam. It gives a good opportunity to break the plastic seal and read. Ah.
Yeah, it's
You'll be busy for a while before you get to the ninth canto. Oh? This is chapter one. Okay, we have it on electronic. Here's the section. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said to Durvas Muni, I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the core of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee, even those who are devotees of my devotee, are very dear to me. O best of the brahmanas, without saintly persons for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. Without the association of brahmanas and saintly persons, since pure devotees give up their homes, wives, children, relatives, riches, and even their lives simply to serve me, without any desire for material improvement in this life or in the next, how can I give up such devotees at any time? He's not being asked to give them up, but he's, you know, how can I feel disconnected in any way? Then he gives a nice metaphor. As chaste women bring their gentle husbands under control by service, the pure devotees, who are equal to everyone and completely attached to me, their heart, bring me under their full control. My devotees, who are always satisfied to be engaged in my loving service, are not interested even in the four principles of liberation. There's five kinds of liberation we discussed in the morning class. So merging is number five. Becoming one with the Supreme, Sayujya Mukti. But there's four others. Vaishnava liberations, Salokya Sarupya, Samipya, and Sharshti. Although these are automatically achieved by their service, they're not interested in them. They don't even want liberation. They don't want something material. They don't want something liberation. Then what is to be said of such perishable happiness as elevation to the higher planetary systems? The pure devotee is always within the core of my heart. And I am always in the heart of the pure devotee. My devotees do not know anything else but me, and I do not know anyone else but them. That's his bhaktavatsala quality. So when Sudama came to see him, it's a lila. It's simply fulfilling Krishna's desire for loving exchange with his dear devotee. So Sudama came. Krishna's internal potency made that arrangement. And this particular part of the pastime is so nice. There's many nice paintings. There's a B.G. Sharma painting of this pastime, Rukmini assisting Krishna, and some of Rukmini's principal assistants assisting her. Literally worshiping him. And Sudama wasn't interested in being worshipped. He was interested in his friendship with Krishna. And then after this worship and offering nice edible items, nice meal to Sudama, they spent time sitting together in a relaxed manner, discussing their childhood activities together. One can only imagine, you know, somebody that you had dear, dear, dear friendship when growing up, and so many years later they come to visit. And so naturally, like that, as if ordinary, just discussing their activities together. And they spent the whole rest of the day just going over this kind of exchange. And Sudama spent the evening in the royal palace. And the next morning, he was ready to return. And there's different versions. One version is he was so satisfied in his exchange with Krishna that he didn't want to ask anything from Krishna. Another version is that he forgot. He was just so absorbed in his loving dealing with Sudama, he forgot to ask what his wife had asked him to ask for. And another was he was feeling shamed. Why should I ask for something paltry and material from my dear friend Krishna? He didn't want to do that. But Krishna noticed behind his back, he was holding this little bag. And Krishna asked him, "What's that?" "Oh, it's nothing." So Krishna snatched it from his hand. And he opened up the cloth and found inside this, these pieces of broken rice. Broken rice. Now, Krishna's Krishna. He's the Lord of all opulence. And in Dwarka, it's the manifestation of maximum manifestation of opulence found in this world. So Krishna, what does Krishna need? It's broken, inferior quality rice. But immediately he began, popped some rice in his mouth and was chewing, very good. One, two. The third time he went to reach, Rukmini caught his hand. No. So one version of commentary is, she didn't want Krishna to eat inferior quality rice. And another version is, she was thinking, Krishna, how are you going to reciprocate with your devotee? How are you going to repay him? You're accepting the love with which he's offered this rice. How are you going to reciprocate with him? So don't take anything more. Wives have interesting ways of thinking sometimes. Because she's her husband, she's the goddess of fortune. Her husband is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in any case, she checked Krishna, and Sudama, now thoroughly embarrassed, left home. And as he was walking home, he was thinking. This is my favorite part of the story. Krishna is very kind. Krishna knew why I came. And Krishna didn't ask me why I had come, because he knew not only why I had come, but if I had asked him why I had come, I would have to tell him. If he had asked me, because I'm a Brahmin, he'd have to tell him the truth. And then Krishna would give me something. And when I would get something from Krishna, I would become proud. And Krishna doesn't like his devotees to become proud, so Krishna didn't ask me why I had come. Krishna is very kind. Krishna is very kind. And his whole way back, he's thinking, Krishna is very kind. And then when he got home, he didn't see his home. He saw a big palace. And just yesterday I was here, and there was my home, and it's gone. And where's my wife? And he called his wife's name, and this woman came out of the big palace, and he hardly recognized her because she was decorated in opulent garments and jewels. And when she spoke, he could recognize her voice. Oh, that's, you're my wife. What happened? And she said, well, I thought, I wonder why you're asking what happened. You just assumed that you had asked Krishna to take care of our destitute condition, and Krishna made this arrangement. And then Sudama could understand, even though I didn't ask, Krishna knew. And Krishna took care of this anxiety of my dear wife. Krishna is so kind. Krishna is so kind. And this is the way of a life of devotion. One isn't wanting from Krishna. In life of pure devotion, one is not wanting from Krishna. One is simply wanting service and opportunity to associate with Krishna in whatever the circumstance. It may be this, it may be that. I'll narrate a little bit something that, in addition to how this story indicates, Prabhupada, on several occasions, he instructed his students, his disciples, in this matter. One story, Prabhupada's story, is there was a particular point in time where the devotees wanted a formal portrait of, a photograph of Prabhupada to put on the altar. So they got together and they approached Prabhupada and said, is something that we can arrange with you, that we can have a professional photographer come and make formal portrait so we can place on the altar? And immediately Prabhupada took the opportunity as, you know, some way to instruct his disciples. So not only how to instruct, but he became the choreographer. He said how he wanted it to be done. So he said he wanted two photos. And one photo was to be taken outdoors, and he had a particular place in mind, you know, a very large tree that casts a large amount of shade, and Prabhupada stood right at the edge of the shade with the dark background behind him, because then it would be very, so light on his clothing, but dark background behind him. So it would, very good. And he dressed in simple cotton cloth with no kurta, top, just his uttariya, the upper piece, and his dhoti, and danda. And he stood very straight and looked very stern. This is the renunciation. Okay, and after a series of those pictures were taken, he had them, you know, prior. He had arranged for an indoor photograph with a purple velvet backdrop. And then he went to change clothes, and it was bright orange silk with a long sleeve kurta, no danda, very opulent. And the devotee that narrated this to me said, when Prabhupada came out, he came out like a dancer, with his hands gesturing like this, and then he put his hand over his head and did a little slow pirouette, turned around, smiled, and he wanted to instruct. He said his instruction was, for Krishna, we can accept any situation. We can accept simplicity. We can accept opulence. As long as it's for Krishna service, we can accept it, either of these. And then he stood before the purple velvet backdrop and, you know, bright lights because it was a dark backdrop, and that became one of the photos that went on the altar. The lesson, there's another nice example that I was personally a participant in, but the lesson was to be attached to Krishna and Krishna's service. And for Krishna's service, we can accept whatever the circumstances suitable for his service. So, this other occasion was in Vrindavan. One morning, during a morning walk. So how many of you here have been to our Vrindavan temple? Krishna Balaram Mandir. Okay. Almost everybody. May you, who have not gone, please, Krishna bless you that may go. During this, I think it was the year after the Krishna Balaram Mandir opening, so there wasn't, it wasn't the scene like you see today. When you walk out the front gate today, it's cars and honking and noise and shops, and it was nothing. It was fields. No traffic. It's completely quiet. And so out the front gate, turn right, and down the road, there was no, you know, that big arch that's there. None of that. None of the big buildings. Just fields in both directions. And down about a mile or so was a grove of trees. So he liked nature. So he left the road and went into the grove of trees and started speaking about how wonderful it is to live in Vrindavan. And Vrindavan is such a nice place. One can just simply think of Krishna making some economic arrangement just by living off what nature supplies. He walked over to a tree that has some dangling pods, and he turned to one of the devotees and said, "Are these edible?" And he said, "There's so many, nature supplies so many things, roots and by nature's abundance, there's so many things." And we said, walking through the forest, there was a little bit of a drop-off at the edge of the forested area. And he pointed, said, "See over there, there's a householder. And see next to the little hut, they have a cow." So if a sadhu goes early in the morning at milking time and has his little pot, surely any household will give a little cup of milk to the sadhu. So these things supplied from nature. And then the rest of the day is simply hearing and chanting about Krishna and remembering Krishna. Vrindavan is such a nice place. He was just going on like that. Life of simplicity. And then I took it as an instructive man. Turned right in the middle of the forested area, turned to Brahmananda and said, "Brahmananda, did you receive the $50,000? Did you apply the $50,000 to the printing of the next publication? Did you check the color separations before the printer began their work and you'll be making the final run?" Like all these practical arrangements. And, you know, he got the answers, and then immediately it was a 180 degree shift again. Oh, how nice it is to live in Vrindavan and in this life of simplicity. So, being happy or being happy. Not based upon the externals, but based upon the position of service to Krishna. Hankering for a life of simplicity, but at the same time not being averse to being involved in practical arrangements of life. He left Vrindavan, a life of simplicity, a life of not just simplicity, just living in the courtyard of the Radhadamodar temple. It was, you know, ideal life for a renounced sadhu. and left to come take on complexity so that we could have the opportunity for devotional service. Very, very difficult. But his heart was in Vrindavan. During the past several days before coming here to the suburbs in Chicago, I was spending time with this little booklet from the, what's it called? Something like the Vrindavan Institute. It's a pamphlet that shows in Jiva Goswami's original handwriting arrangements that he made along with his super high philosophy of the Sandarbhas and commentaries on the Srimad Bhagavatam and so many other wonderful writings. Some of it was just describing Krishna's Leela. So many wonderful writings. But the booklet is explaining how Jiva Goswami was very, very practical at the same time. He, something that was unheard of in his time was for a sadhu to make a will. So it was in 1606, he made a will, which was a document that was being used in Europe. It wasn't even so much prevalent in India at the time. Then he had it redone 2 years later to reconfirm the will of 1606. And then he negotiated with Akbar the commitment of Akbar to protect the temples of Vrindavan. So there was a document signed by Emperor Akbar that later checked kings from that line, ruling Mughal kings, from going and raiding the treasury of the temples to take care of their armies or whatever their needs were at the time. And many of you who have been to Vrindavan have been to Govardhan Hill. And one of the things you do when you go to Govardhan Hill commonly is circumambulate Radhakund and Shyamakund. That prakrama path around Radhakund and Shyamakund is Jiva Goswami's arrangement. Because it was a service to Raghunath Das, who liked to pay obeisances around Radhakund Shyamakund. So he made arrangement. I mean, there's contract for the land. The perimeter path around Radhakund, the contract for the land on which Radhadamodar was built. He bought the land from, I forget the name of the person. He made so many practical arrangements, similar to what Prabhupada did when in his final will and during his life as well. Property protection was very important to our founder Acharya, as it was to our predecessor Acharyas. But many of our, of course, predecessor Acharyas were on such a high level of transcendental consciousness and literally in loving exchanges with Krishna directly that one would not necessarily expect them to also be very concerned about these practical things. But our founder Acharya was, as Jiva Goswami was, and as Krishna was, he wants to see the love of his devotees reciprocated with. This is the final slide here, taken from ISKCON Desire Tree. It's a reference from a purport in the third canto Bhagavatam, where Prabhupada is making reference to the Sudama Brahman story, where he writes, "If one makes friendship with Krishna, one will never be cheated, and he will get all help needed." Krishna makes a similar statement in Bhagavad Gita, Yogakshema Vaham Yaham. Does anybody know that verse? You two know it? Say it together, duet.
Ananyasintayantam mam yejana paripasate
What's the meaning? Shatarupa. Preserve.
Preserve what he has and
carry what they lack. Yoga kshema vaham yaham. So this is Krishna. It's not just a story, it's Krishna. It's how Krishna reciprocates naturally. It's his affection for his devotee is very strong. One of the symptoms of surrender is to recognize that Krishna is my protector. Krishna is my maintainer. That's two of the six. So maintenance is an important item for persons who have material bodies and families who have children and dependents, and seeing to the maintenance of the family members is a concern. In a life of devotion, it's not like we just lounge around complacent and let Krishna maintain us. We do activities that are for livelihood, but we understand, we should understand, in Krishna consciousness we should understand, it's not our labor that's maintaining us, it's Krishna that's maintaining us. We're serving Krishna, and Krishna is maintaining us. It's very similar to that nice example of the boys in the school of their guru. When they go forward and receive something, it's the property of the guru. And if the guru neglects to call them for their meal, they'll fast. They don't go whine and complain, hey, we worked hard, we gathered all that stuff together, where's our meal? What's going on? That's kind of a modern way of speaking about something like that, but a life of devotion is different. A life of devotion is Krishna is our maintainer. And we want to see Krishna as the one that we're serving, and he's our dearmost friend. So if one makes friendship with Krishna, one will never be cheated, and he will get all help needed. So this is just a little summary of Sudama's story. Vibhu Chaitanya, you shared with me that you particularly appreciated some of Sudama's qualities. So would you like to share some of that?
The very first verse in Srimad Bhagavatam
on this chapter.
Sukadeva Goswami starts to narrate about this episode of Brahma Sudama visiting Krishna. He explains five qualities of Brahma Sudama. First one is he is very well learned in the spiritual science, and because of that he is his senses are controlled. The second thing is he is detached from objects of sense enjoyment, and because of that his mind is very peaceful.
Mm-hmm.
And the fourth quality is because his mind was peaceful, his senses were controlled. And the fifth quality was, in the second verse, it said that he just maintained himself from whatever that came, that means he had to complete shelter of Krishna. He didn't fight or run. So that I really like those five qualities.
So why don't you do that? Don't tempt me, Maharaj. His quality matched what he did. His quality was a brahmana. And if one has the quality of a brahmana, one is very happy with that arrangement. He wasn't unhappy. And his, far as I can understand from the description, it wasn't like a nagging materialistic wife. His wife was also of similar quality. However, her concern was the welfare of her husband. So now how do we decide what's suitable for us? Should we do this or should we do that or should we do the other? What's the standard that we should apply in our life? And in very simple language, we should not artificially go either direction, accumulate more than what we require, nor give up things that we cannot be peaceful if they're not there. So you keep things simple. It was in the verse this morning, simplicity of how we lead our life. Keep things simple. Accept those things that you can then in a sustainable way remain peaceful. And in that frame, aspire for deeper. Now, it's an obstacle if one has hankering to, in a steadily way, consider taking shelter of Krishna, because we get distracted by icha and devesha, our attractions and repulsions of things. Just a little sharing on this. I had a very wonderful time 1 year. It was a whole year. A godbrother named Purnachandra, American devotee, grihastha, was staying in New York, and we shared a room. And after Mangal Arti, we went upstairs to chant our japa together. And he was really strict about attentiveness. And, you know, for example, temperature, or, you know, whatever it is, do what you need to do. And don't chant japa and then go adjust the fan or adjust the temperature or da-da-da-da-da-da. Just sit. Complete, some amount of chanting, full, whatever it is. Then you may stop and, go and get some water or go and do something or something. And then, okay, now sit. So, with emphasis upon focused attention to the holy name and not on bodily comfort or this or that or the other thing, distractions. Just, you put that to the side, focus on the holy name. If you, something needs to be done, you wait, and like that. So, it was intense japa. And by chanting the holy name in that way, it helps in facing circumstances of life. And the most important thing is your attention goes to Krishna. The most important thing is you feel comfortable with the external this and that's. The this and that's are endless. The circumstances that could use some tweaking or adjusting or modification. Literally, it's endless. Endless. So then each of us has to find what is our natural position, what varna and ashram, what's natural for us, what's suitable for us. I mentioned it this morning. I'm happy to mention it again. During these Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday in Chicago, we had a series of speakers on different topics. The Tuesday morning class was a live Skype presentation by Shivaram Swami from Hungary. He was born in the West. I believe he was either in Chicago or Toronto. His mother is 190-something years old. lives in Toronto, a Hungarian lady, and he's the GBC in Hungary, so he's very interested, or extremely interested in the subject of Varnashram because of Prabhupada's teaching on that subject. So one of the things that he mentioned, very nice, there's a verse in the Bhagavatam spoken by Krishna to Uddhava, if I remember correctly, where there's a list of 30 qualities of a civilized human being. There's some persons that have two legs that aren't so civilized. But civilities, and so he said he's done this experiment in Hungary where he invited the devotees, Hungarian devotees, to self-analyze and, you know, amongst their peers to analyze of these 30 qualities, which are the qualities that they have strongly developed, which are the ones that are not so strongly developed. And then based upon that, some evaluation of Varna and Ashram, some system. I said to Maharaj, I called him after the class, I said, this is a hot topic. You know, people aren't so comfortable with this one. He said, well, because it was so direct, there wasn't resistance, and it was amazing to see how well it went. So I then invited him, can you, this seminar that you're teaching in Hungary, all around the place, would you come sometime and do this seminar in America? I'll make an arrangement for you. And so he agreed. He said, it takes 8 hours. I said, okay, we can dedicate one of our Gita Nagari retreats to Varnashram topic. You know, it's creative and different, challenging, you know, because I'm sure it's going to evolve in how to understand the subject matter. Different people have different opinions on it, and that's the way he made his presentation was, this is not the answer, this is what I'm attempting to do, to fulfill the instruction of my spiritual master and the founder Acharya Viscon, and I'm happy to share it with you. So, like these five qualities, there's to the degree to which one may manifest those qualities within oneself helps determine what situation, and it may be different from another person. Doesn't mean this one's a lesser devotee and that one's a better devotee or something like that. It's just a description of where we are in our trajectory, and from that position is where you should carry out your service. So the essence is not, you know, on the negative side, how much you can do without, and that makes you more advanced. Some persons can live as Sudama was living and be very contented, and someone may live with much more than Sudama had and be very contented. Like Arjuna, he was, for example, also a very dear friend of Krishna, and he was a king with royal opulence and great power and so forth. It doesn't mean Arjuna wasn't such a good devotee. Anyway, it's a nice topic. But as time passes, we'll be exploring some more. Anything else? Somebody would like to comment something, ask something? You have something?
I always like you always teach us that Krishna is kind.
Yeah.
I always take inspiration from that teaching Guru Maharaj, like Sudama processing, when Krishna didn't ask the reason he came for. He was thinking Krishna is kind, he didn't bring it up because I might become proud and all that. And also similarly, when he saw the opulence also, he was processing like Krishna is kind. Specifically, like I took this message, like when Mataji, like when she went for many surgeries, couple of years back, when the mother, she expressed in her offering, Vyaspada offering, that, you know, there's a teaching that helped her, so that's, I appreciate that.
Hmm. It's nice to hear about, think about. It's another thing to feel, whatever the circumstances, Krishna is being very kind. But that's the product of attachment to Krishna and devotion to Krishna. One actually feels that, whatever the circumstances, the have and the have not, the abundance and the, you know, challenge. Someone's treating me very kindly, someone is treating me very harshly. Krishna is very kind. Yes.
When I'm thinking that Krishna is very kind in different situations, and some or the other way I'm connecting it to myself, that because Krishna didn't want me to fall in this situation, that is why he didn't ask this to me. I'm not talking about Sudama, but I'm talking about myself. But ultimately it is connecting to my welfare, my benefit, that somehow I was benefited. So is this way of thinking is okay?
Yes. Now, I'll just a little add to, the way of thinking is okay. The detail or the subtleties of how it is beneficial for my circumstance of life, we're commonly, we don't understand fully the depth and, you know, the subtleties of how Krishna is benefiting me. Rather, to something like a child who has faith in their mother or father, and when the faith is there in the mother and father and they give some indication, they may want something else, but when faith in mother and father is there, they're willing to accept the something else. Excuse me, the arrangements of the mother and father, whatever that might be. Do this or don't do that, or let's go here or we won't go there, or something like that. Now that takes a qualified child to take a qualified parent, but we may not understand. My point is this: we may not understand the subtleties of how something is beneficial for me and how Krishna is making this arrangement specifically to help benefit me in some way. I may not understand all that, but basic faith says, I trust in Krishna. That's, you know, similar to this one. I trust in Krishna. If I was Krishna, I would make a different arrangement. Like, you know, going to the hospital for a surgery, I would make a different arrangement. But Krishna is making this arrangement. So it's beneficial. How it is beneficial, the subtlety of that I may not understand, but I trust in Krishna. So just adding, I'm embellishing.
So my mind is not going towards pleasure of Krishna. It is going towards my own benefit. That's what my doubt was.
That's the beginning. You know, again, there's the matter of accepting our present position, which is in what you're describing, not so much thinking what is the pleasure of Krishna, but what's for my benefit. We're oriented in that manner. And we were discussing the purport of this morning's verse was becoming freed from selfishness. So it's natural. We're in this material world because we want to enjoy independently. So we're thinking in that way of what's beneficial for me. As devotion increases, we're thinking, what's pleasing to Krishna? That's what's beneficial for me. And it takes a while to get there. It's the strength of bhakti. And so don't beat yourself up if you're not in that position. Rather, you engage from what is appropriate and aspire in course of time by Krishna's mercy to just become interested in Krishna's pleasure and happiness. That's all. It grows. organically or naturally.
When you were explaining about how Krishna and Rama are good friends, you made a statement that despite, even though they weren't the same, they still became friends.
Yes.
I was just wondering if there was a specific reason or something to take from that statement. Because I heard it, maybe you gave a reason, but I don't remember.
Well, the higher reason, when we hear Krishna's pastimes, there's different levels or layers. So, on the fullest transcendental platform, it's just loving exchange. It doesn't matter. And it's an exhibition of, it doesn't matter. It's an exhibition of love. So that's something I remarked. At the same time, worldly persons do make distinctions between, you know, social position or whatever that might be, you know, wealth position or birth position or who is smarter than the other one, and, you know, those kinds of temporal material distinctions of between the two was so strong that it made no difference to them. Of course, children can be like that. Just like Drupad and Kripacharya. When he got older, it did make a difference. When they were younger, there was an innocence. Friendship was everything. So in Krishna's case, it wasn't just in student life, it was in their adult life. Not making a distinction between, you know, what's this person's birth or what's the material considerations. The persons who we can fit, as I mentioned this morning, like, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his great affection for Kolavecha Sridhar. He was so poor. He lived in a thatched little cottage, and the roof had so many holes that it was like not having a roof. So when it rained, the roof didn't do anything to stop the rain. Usually that's what thatched roofs are for, is to stop the rain. There were so many holes, it didn't stop the rain. And his clothes had more holes than clothes. But he was not, you know, so he was, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't consider that. He considered his devotion. That's when we are, so the application is when we consider who might be us, ideally it's not, you know, what the circumstance of their life is, it's the devotion of their life. Not just in the innocence of childhood, but in our life. But in Ryan Swami is a cornucopia of nice stories. Yesterday he shared a story about Jayananda. Some of you know who is Jayananda. Jayananda was a Prabhupada disciple. Very, very simple man that just, he loved to serve. So, Bandhu Narayan Maharaj said, well, he was a new devotee living in Los Angeles. They were, a group of the young devotees were invited to go to San Francisco and assist Jayananda in building the first Rath Yatra cart. So the enticement was they have the best prasadam. So, you know, a bunch got in a van to go help Jayananda build the cart. And Jayananda was, he didn't like to spend money. He liked to get everything donated. So one of the, you know, the wood for the Rath Yatra cart was railroad ties. Railroad ties are really thick. I mean, you know, what the metal of the track rests upon is a railroad tie. He got railroad ties donated and managed to fasten them together because he could get them for free. So the cart was this huge lumbering thing. And to assemble it was, you know, heavy. He had this crew of devotees that worked really, really hard. As Bandin Ryan Maharaj said, you know, I was not lazy as a young man, but at the end of the day, we just worked long, long hours and had this huge feast at the end. He said it was tired to the bone. And then the place where they had to sleep was a storefront. You know, and all these guys, brahmacharis and young men, just like, it was summertime, so they just like rolled out a little mat and slept on the floor and conked out. And Jayananda, said, you know, quietly, I'd like the place by the door. And the devotees are saying, no, you know, you should be in a quiet place because it's noisy by the street. And he said, I don't sleep so well at night. So better if I'm by the door. If somebody tries to break in, I can just have my head by the door and that'll wake up and I can do some service. His hallmark, one of them, was just, he just loved to serve. So he wasn't a sophisticated person. He wasn't a highly scholarly person. He just was his heart was so filled with a desire to serve Prabhupada's mission and whatever was needed and live very frugally and serve the devotees day and night. And that was his heart. He was loved by everybody, particularly by Srila Prabhupada. So, seek friendship in those places, regardless of what the person's education or background is. Very simple man. He was a taxi cab driver. He had saved enough money, something, I forget the number, $35,000 or something from in those days. That was a lot of money. He just gave it to Prabhupada so he could print something. That was his happiness, just doing something that would help Prabhupada. It was so successful that Prabhupada then said, all of our major centers in the world should have major Rath Yatras, and the next venue was New York. So he came to New York, and I had the opportunity of assisting Jayananda. One of the services that I did was made sure that they had prasadam. Boy, they could eat a lot of prasadam. And it wasn't enough. I thought I was doing a good job. They never complained. But then he told Tamal Krishnamurti there wasn't enough prasadam. So I got some mercy from Tamal Krishnamurti. That was an interesting experience. Anything else? Yes.
This is a discussion. How do we differentiate between having the getting on the platform of Krishna is very kind and so he's provided me the situation for a good reason and I need to so I need to work on myself internally, versus there's some shift that needs to happen from myself and not blame the externals, and I need to take a step rather than what I've been doing in the past. So how do I differentiate between these situations and go and
well,
choose a track?
Two things. Being in in a mood of acceptance of Krishna's kindness or negate taking some practical steps. The circumstance is there, that's external, it's outside of one's control, it's just there. You're walking down the path of life and here comes a train heading at you or something or whatever it is. And you can't change the externals. You can certainly address how you respond to those externals, and there may very well be something that you take as a practical step given the circumstance. The primary consideration in a dynamic like that is the mood right? Is the mood a doership mood? Is the mood a retaliation mood? Is the mood a control mood? Is the mood a defense mood? Is the mood a service mood? And you know, like this question of, am I thinking of what's the interest of Krishna? What would Krishna want of me in this circumstance? So at least exercising that muscle a little bit in the as you go along in spiritual life, makes that contemplation happen more readily, more naturally, like a reflex. And then the door is open for Krishna to give you the indication. If you don't ask the question, even Krishna hammers you with the indication, you won't receive it. But if the inclination of what does Krishna want of me, what will be pleasing to Krishna in this circumstance, much more likely the indication will come, and when it comes, you'll recognize it. The selfishness blocks all that. Does that address your question? Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, when you are describing the pastime of Sudama and Krishna going into the forest and collecting the wood and arbor, you are emphasizing on the quality of doing it for their, or pleasing for their spiritual master.
Mm.
So I have a two-part question, Maharaj. One is, the way I was brought up, doing it for oneself, how does one cultivate that habit of doing for the spiritual master? That is the first question I have. The second question is, the person, for me, it's right now, the person, I don't have any official spiritual master, so how does one, to whom does one offer the fruits to it? One were to
well, the second one is simple. For us within ISKCON, it's simple, and that's our founder Acharya. You know, so much has been received, just like a child received from parent, so much has been received from our founder Acharya. So, the offering goes there, the prayers go there, the shelter seeking goes there. It's not like later on, Prabhupada disappears. It's still essential for all the members of ISKCON to see Prabhupada in that very special position as a primary Shiksha Guru for all of us. And the indebtedness remains. The first question, it's an important question, and it's an interesting question. The ideal is that one learns these things from childhood. And if one hasn't learned these things from childhood, and now here's adulthood, and now I'm hearing these things, training and education is how that happens, ideally. And ideally, those impressions are there from childhood. But in childhood means, then there's parents and there's teachers and there's adults in one's life that understand these principles, and in a caring and, effective and affective way, transmit that understanding. And if that when that doesn't happen, or not fully happens, then how does one your question is how to get that training and education? How does that quality develop? Well, it's not as easy. It's not as natural. So then it takes some extra effort, specifically associating with those who have that quality, being guided by someone who has that quality, systematically studying Prabhupada's books because the message is there, and in an instruction form, in sound vibration form, the message is there. One needs to conscientiously cultivate. It's much easier in childhood. So those that are parents need to understand the important role as a parent to share such core values, so that their children in their adult life have those core values. They're within. They just manifest in adult behavior instead of children behavior. It's gradual, because we're all beginning, and it's Kali Yuga. You know, the opposition is enormous. The current is flowing in the opposite direction, very rapidly. So we're going against the current of modern society. Still, the disadvantage has its the antidote, and that is the process of hearing. Shrinvata sukata krishna punya shavana kirtana, etc. Riddhyantakstoya badrani vidhunoti saritsitam. Hearing of Srimad Bhagavatam on a regular basis. Shrinvata sukata krishna. Nashta prayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. Bhagavati uttama shloke bhaktir bhavati. Even in that negative, bhakti can arise and awaken, and light comes on, the darkness is dispelled by hearing. Srimad Bhagavatam is that medicine. Bhavosha dachotra manobi ramat. It's medicine. Yes.
I think about Krishna is kind. It's very attractive to me when I hear that. Like, usually when I hear from you or from my mentors, whenever there is something higher principle is given, it's very attractive. My heart goes, but my practice doesn't grow. And what happens is that these I feel like I'm not able to access it in some situations, even though I remember and I appreciate, but I feel like I'm not able to access that space. And especially when some situation of trigger happens, or somewhere my heart is getting addressed, that kind of place, there's this reactive mode also, besides this teaching or remembrance of Krishna's time, so both are there, and the reactive mode is expressive than the other one. Then it becomes hard sometimes, and just I don't know what to ask, but I wanted to ask you what, how, what should I do, and how should I?
We've probably received at least 100 instructions in this matter. So one thing to do is go back and, you know, keep a little library of all those nice instructions that you've gotten and refresh your memory. When that neither here nor there, or pull over here and pull over there, space comes, go back and... So that the instructions, the lessons, can go in. It's not like the lesson going in means, boom, you know, that uncomfortable space is now gone. It's not likely to happen quite like that. But at least you know a direction to move in. And my understanding is, when somebody doesn't know the direction to move in, it's the discomfort lingers. If they know the direction to move in, then you move, and the mood of positive, at least this much I know, and you just move there. You invest, rather than the anxiety thing, it's, I'm moving. And it gives enthusiasm and energy and a positive spirit. Not the other things completely gone, but the bigger picture, the ultimate situation, or you know, the message from this situation is, my shelter in Krishna is not matured. It's anishtita bhakti instead of nishtha. It doesn't make the situation go away. It just makes the situation, now I understand the situation better. And how does one go from unsteady to steady? From anishta to nishtha bhakti. Invest energy in the bhajana kriya process. Go back to basics and hear and chant with the best effort you can make. Diligently, attentively, sincerely, calling to Krishna, etc. Trusting in Krishna. When the Krishna connection is strong, even those moments, they say residual tendencies, like you just described, when something comes again and comes again and comes again and comes again, and there it goes again, it tells something about one's attachment. You know, a deeper seated kind of conditioning. And then those are important areas to pay special attention, not to panic when it happens, but stay with it, pay attention to it, and in that space, reach out to Krishna. Even, you know, it's not with the same enthusiasm, strength, etc. Reach out to Krishna. And that the resources that Krishna has provided. Not that someone is going to come in, parachute in, and fix the situation, now I feel better. And then it happens again, okay, where's that parachutist coming from this time? But rather, you know, it's your relationship with Krishna. Something that I presented on Monday evening for my part during our GBC meeting, commentary, well, you can go back and listen to the recording and see the PowerPoint that goes along with it, but that the message in a nutshell or boiled down simply is um, the verse Icha Dvesha Samutena Dvandva Mohena Bharata, as long as there is Icha and Dvesha, hankering and aversion, desire and hate, then we'll not see Krishna. Those things occupy our attention instead of Krishna occupying our attention. And occupying our attention away from Krishna just perpetuates the cycle of, you know, material existence again and again and again and again and again and again, the rerun and rerun and nauseam, you know, rerun. So the remedy is to cultivate the desire toward Krishna and Krishna's service and Krishna's associates and Krishna's pastimes and Krishna's devotees and serving, then there's spiritual strength that can then draw one closer to seeing Krishna even in those circumstances, that Krishna is very kind. It doesn't disappear. Krishna is very kind. The challenge may still be there, but Krishna's kindness is also there. And that's part of gradually moving from the stuck to the unstuck, or the, you know, conditioned to the freed, liberated position. Liberated in the sense of my shelter of Krishna is not obscured by the circumstances. Circumstances may come. It doesn't obscure my vision if I have shelter in Krishna. Okay. You want to add anything from that chapter that you've been reading and enjoying so much?
I really want to appreciate Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur for his wonderful commentary on the 10th canto, Srimad Bhagavatam. I just started reading, so I am not deeper into the pastime, but where so Sudama's wife is asking him to, you know, go and see Krishna. So there are two things that that is happening within her when she is about to speak. So the one thing that happens to her is she is so much in distress because of, you know, his, her husband is not
emaciated. Yeah.
So she is having some stress. She's fear. And I was reading the translation and I was thinking, why is she approaching her husband in fear? I couldn't understand that. But then Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments saying that because she is about to tell her husband to go and see Krishna and ask for something material, but she knows internally that he does not like to ask anything material. So she is, but she also sees him in that condition, so she is kind of both ways. She wants to say that, but she does not want to say, she is afraid. So that is why she is having that fear. And then the next verse where she says some points, and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is explaining why she told that one, why she told this one, why she told that one. It was so nice. For example, he might question back. So she is, in one verse, she is understanding that Sudama will ask these questions to me back. So I am going to give him answers for all those questions. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is explaining that how she is telling, go and see Krishna. He may ask why I should see Krishna. So then she says, he is your friend. When you were young, you, both of you are friends. So there is friendship, there is some relationship, you can go to see him. And then he may say that, what can this friend do? So she says, he is Shriyapati, his husband of Goddess of Fortune, so he can give you something. And then he says, I am a wretched soul, you know, and he is Shriyapati, you know, what can he give me? You know, he will not even see me. And then she says, like, you know, Brahmanya, he gives shelter to Brahmanas. He loves Brahmanas. At least you are a Brahmana. So why don't you do that? You know, you are a Brahmana, you can go. And then he says, I don't have, you know, any devotion to Krishna. And then she says, he is Shanya, to one who has some quality, even some qualities Krishna sees, and then he gives shelter. And then he, Vishwa Chakrati Thakur goes on and on, just one verse, he just explains, it was so nice. And I, yeah, when I read those, I, it's so wonderful while reading all those commentaries, without which I'll not be able to understand.
He's a relisher. He's a Rasika Bhakta. And he's sharing his Rasikaness very liberally. With great effort to share. And so if we're wise, we'll take his association. Okay. Okay, and then we'll have one kirtan.
Did you mention that Sudama would have bought bride if Krishna would have asked?
Sudama was thinking as he was walking back to his home. The reason Krishna didn't ask, why have you come, is because I would have had to tell him I'm a Brahmin. I couldn't lie. Then when I would tell him, Krishna would give me something. But Krishna knows my heart. If Krishna gave me something, I would become proud. I'm special. Krishna gave me something. So Krishna didn't ask, because he knew that I would become proud. Krishna is so kind. Would you like to sing? You can be the Radunga player.